You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Late night, midnight on the interstate, and I didn't feel so great until I saw the city.
Welcome back to Straight from the Source with Michael Russo. Thanks as always for tuning in. My guest today, Bob Kurtz, the legendary longtime since the inception play-by-play guy for the Minnesota Wild. Before that, did the Minnesota North Stars, the Boston Red Sox, Michigan State Spartans, Minnesota Twins, has done it all. We have just a really, really fun conversation in the press box before Game 6 about his career. A lot of funny questions, a lot of good information for aspiring broadcasters, and just stuff on his career. I really think that you'll enjoy this this podcast, in large part because Kevin Faulness, of all people, asked a bunch of really funny questions that I think loosened Bob up. As I mentioned, he's flirting with retirement. The good news is that Game 6, if he eventually makes that decision to retire fully, Game 6 will not be his last game. He's got at least one more game, Game 7, Friday night, Minnesota at Vegas, after a huge Game 6 3-0 victory last night against the Vegas Golden Knights at home. The Wild just played a tremendous hockey game. It was mistake-free hockey for the first two periods by both teams. You could see both teams didn't want to make a mistake. But what I liked about the Wild's game is that they got out of that second period scoreless. This is a team that had been outshot 72-40 in the second period, outscored 8-1 in the series, but no goals in the second period, no goals against in the second period, and they kept the shots down to 7-5 in favor of Vegas. But what it did is it showed you that they didn't stray from playing a tight, checking, suffocating game, especially in the neutral zone. Vegas probably had that little better of the territorial advantage, but as the Wild always do, they worked hard, defended hard, and then broke the game loose in the third period. And what was so shocking about the way they broke the game loose is they got an odd man rush. I mean, this was a tight checking game by both teams. As Vegas was trying to end Minnesota's season and the Wild were fighting for their lives, but all of a sudden Zach Parise makes a nice soft little chip pass on the exit out of his own zone to spring a 2-on-1 for Kevin Fiala and Ryan Hartman. Hartman, just a fabulous finish of a incredible Kevin Fiala pass. And all of a sudden, it's 1-0 Minnesota with about 15:39 to go. You think it's going to be the longest 15:39 ever, but just 3-4 minutes later, the Wild get a break in the hockey game. Chandler Stephenson scores a goal. Alex Tuck is camped in the crease. The Wild are freaking out because Foligno was on the ice, skated right to referee TJ Luxmore and told him, hey, if anybody knows what goalie interference is, it's me, because of what happened to him earlier in the series against Marc-Andre Fleury, but also at the end of the year with Darcy Kemper. And he was barely in the crease on those. In fact, it's debatable to say if he was even in the crease. Here, Cam Talbot is just sitting there, can't play his position. Alex Tuck is standing in the crease, not trying to get out. Apparently, TJ Luxmore was yelling at him the entire time to get out of the crease. Originally, TJ calls a good goal. The referees did a good job. Gordy Dwyer, TJ Luxmore, and the two linesmen did a good job of huddling, discussing it, and then reversing their call. The irony here is now Pete DeBoer, who had the correct challenge earlier in the season, which I thought was a very gutsy challenge that he wound up winning. Here he now challenges that there was no goaltender interference. The referees look at it quickly, decide there indeed was goalie interference, and the Wild get a power play, and Kevin Fiala makes it 2-0. So Vegas goes from thinking they tied the game to being down to 2-0, and there's the turning point, and then Nick Bjugstad scores a beautiful goal off another really good shift by the fourth line. So just a really good game. Kevin Fiala was just a matter of time before he broke out. He had worked so hard in the series. The only game that I really thought that he, you know, sort of a non-factor was probably game five in Vegas. But the rest of the series, he was just working his butt off and getting tons of chances and just couldn't score. Last night, you know, as I said on my Worst Seats in the House podcast and on The Fan on both my interviews, it just felt like Kevin Fiala was going to have a great game to extend this thing to a game seven where the Wild are 3-0. There's got to be a ton of doubt right now in Vegas's mind. The last three times now that they've been up 3-1 a series, the opponent has forced a game seven. Last summer in the bubble, Vancouver wound up losing in game seven as Vegas extended and advanced to the next round. But in 2019, they were actually the last NHL team to blow a 3-1 series lead against the San Jose Sharks. A little controversy in that series, if you remember correctly. The Wild are, you know, again, what happened in 2003 makes no difference now. Obviously, the cast is completely different other than Darby Hendrickson being on the bench as an assistant coach. But the Wild, if the Wild have complete this comeback, they'll be the first team, I believe, in NHL history to rally back from 3-3-1 deficits in their tenure. So, you know, heck of an outcome for the Wild. And now all the pressure is absolutely on Vegas. The Wild, you know, proving again that a chip and a chair, you have a chance. The Wild came back here for game six, wound up winning a game. And now Vegas, who is very banged up right now, Pat Chiaretti hasn't played in the series. Reeves looks like he's hurt. Noshik is hurt, and obviously Brady McNabb's on the COVID-19 protocol list. Now all the pressure is on them. And by the way, the winner of the series, their reward for that is going to Denver to play game one of the next round, probably Sunday afternoon on NBC. And as we know, the Wild this season has been, let's see, they've had a couple big wins against Colorado, but mostly outplayed against them. So they'll have to figure that out, but that's a story for another day if they so happen to advance. But man, just a gutsy effort by the Wild to win 3-0. Cam Talbot, who I haven't mentioned yet on the open of the show, just again, awesome. Made a huge third period stop. Was it third period or second period? I believe second period that one right by the side of the net. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head who had the chance, but Talbot was just great. Second shutout of the playoffs to lead the league, 23 saves, and this is coming off a 38 save game where the Wild were outshot 40-14 in Vegas. So Cam Talbot has been everything the Wild had hoped for, and now they go on to try to win a game seven that Bob Kurtz will get to call on The Fan here in Minnesota. Without further ado, let's get to Bob Kurtz. Really, I'm telling you, you will love this podcast. Well, Bob, welcome to Straight from the Source. Man, this has been a long time coming.
Yeah, it's interesting. I said hello, skinny, when you came in because I haven't seen you this year.
I mean,
I passed you twice in the press box, and that's been it. It has been, in that way, one strange, strange season.
I know, and one reason why I really haven't seen Bob and Tob and all is that the press box is broken into these corridors where certain, like, we all have these, you know, like, I don't know, what am I? I'm number four. Okay, I don't know if what you are. And we have a certain area that number four can only be. And so technically, I'm right now breaking the rules by being down at this end of the press box. But it really has been the strangest season ever. We don't see you on the road. I barely traveled at the beginning of the year. Now I'm traveling more. You are having to call games off a monitor on the road. Tell me what that's been like.
It's interesting. You know, we got started in it with the bubble last year. And I'm glad I did it because, what would that be like? And it's in some ways it's very easy. In some ways it's very hard. And the reason I say that is it all depends, I'm finding, on who's directing and producing the show. For this last week, for example, the game on NBC was very, very easy to do. The game the other night from Vegas was a horror show. I mean, you can't, I don't know whether the camera moves too quick or exactly, but I had a hard time and Tom had a hard time.
Just because
of the way the game was cut, as they say in the business.
Right, the director and the cuts that they're doing.
For example, we couldn't figure out sometimes where the faceoff was.
Right.
Was it in the Minnesota zone or the Vegas zone? Was it to his right or his left? Because they're on a tight shot of a player on the bench and they're not showing where the faceoff is.
Yeah. Well, I was watching a game at home about a month ago, and I think the Wild were in San Jose. and Mark Parrish was doing color. And at one point, he says to LaPanta, he goes, "Well, I assume the goalie's been pulled."
You know what I do though? I watch for the Fox thing, the little Fox box when it says empty net. Then I figure that he's been pulled.
Yeah. I mean, it really is odd times. Hopefully, we get back to normal here. Let's not bury the lead here. Brian Murphy wrote an incredible story on you the other day. I just loved it. Bob Sansevier also, I believe, did something for the Pioneer Press as well.
I've gotten a lot of attention here.
Yeah, I know, Bob.
It's taken me years.
But I decided to get it right so everybody can hear from you. It's very clear, obviously, the last couple of years you've done less games, you've done less travel, things like that. You're considering retirement, but legitimately...
I've kicked the can pretty hard, but I have found in the past, I thought for sure... 5 years ago that I did my last game, that Dallas playoffs.
Right.
I thought that was going to be it. And then I had a chance, I think, to move in with one of my kids and share an apartment in downtown St. Paul. So that brought me back. And then, one thing led to another. And here I am, still doing it 5 years later. This has been a little more of a difficult year. But like I say, I found that it's not a good idea to make up your mind right at the end of the season because you're pretty beat up. And ideally, what you'd like to do is wait until the start of next season and see whether you feel like coming back or not. But that's obviously not fair to the team. You can't do that. So my contract runs until the 30th of June, and I'd like at least a couple of weeks to, really sit down and really think about it.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why I know that you legitimately haven't decided is even Tom Reed doesn't know. And trust me, being the reporter, I'm like, Tom, give me scoop.
Murph and the shooter sort of jumped the gun a little bit, but,
Yeah, Murph's a good person, though, to write about people. I mean, he's a wordsmith, and I thought that he did
Murph is from Detroit, just like I am, so it was one Detroiter to another, so we connect on that level. Yeah.
It's funny, I'm looking at you, and Kevin Faulness, who has a bunch of questions for you in this podcast.
Our man-child is on the loose.
Yeah. the one thing he did say, he wants to know, you say Detroit, and the reason why this popped in my head is, I don't know if you remember the one game at Joe Louis Arena I was having dinner with you and Tom before the game, and I was all flummoxed because I wasn't wearing a tie. Remember, I lost my luggage flying in from somewhere, and I have no problem with that. So one of his questions was ask you, when's the last time you put on a tie, wore a tie, and was a clip on?
Well, it was not a clip on. My last time I wore a tie that I can recall was at my son's wedding reception. I also wore a tie to the wedding. I used to wear ties all the time. I spent 11 years on television in Boston, and that's probably where it goes back to. My partner and I, Jerry Remy with the Red Sox, we would be the only two people in the entire ballpark wearing a sport coat and a tie, and it's like 95 degrees outside. So every so often they'd let us wear golf shirts, if it got really humid or something. So I don't know. I came to hockey and I figured, now I'm on radio. I don't have to worry. I'm not on TV anymore. I don't have to wear the makeup. I don't have to put the tie on. And Al Shaver was always comfortable this way. So I sort of followed in his footsteps.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like
Tom comes in, he looks like he's running for mayor.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got the whole bit. But he is, he's got an image to live up to and a bar to run on West 7th. I don't have any image to live up to.
You know what, but I remember that time in the press room at Joe Louis because you guys knew how flummoxed it was. Not just that I lost my luggage, but that I've worn a shirt and tie. You know what else is
funny? Yep. I go back a ways in this league. I don't remember where this came from. This is like the beards in the playoffs, which actually started with your old New York Islanders. But they never used to do that in the old days. And no one, Al Shaver never wore a sport coat and tie. And all of a sudden, it became, that seemed to be what everybody did.
I remember the first time that I realized that I think that writers should wear ties was we were in Montreal. And it would have been the mid to late 90s. And I got my credential there. And it said on your credential, place in your jacket pocket, meaning sports coat.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I guess I'm supposed to be wearing this in my sports coat. And then I went up to the press box and I met Red Fisher and he was dressed to the nines. And
Red Fisher was too?
Yeah.
I go back to, this probably may be before your time, like Gary Olson, John Shipley, among some other ones we've had on here. I don't think they were all decked out in sport coats.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it was just, so that's just why I always did it. And it's just one of those things. But it's funny, in 05 when I covered the Marlins, my first game that I did, it was my first spring training game that I did. I wore a suit and tie, and some veteran baseball writer looks at me and goes, "Let me just tell you right now, in the middle of summertime, if you're going to be wearing that shirt and tie, you're going to hate life. And so you better take it off. So I knew it was very, very different there. You know what? Another thing happened to Joe Louis in 1998 was the Red Wings win the cup and Scotty Bowman on the ice announces his retirement. So maybe that's what you could do this year, is the second that the Wild win the cup, you say, by the way, this was my last call, and just take all the attention away from them.
I'll file that away. That's interesting.
Let's talk about working with Tom. I mean, you guys are, you know, Mutt and Jeff. I look at you.
I don't know which is which.
But I mean, you guys are.
We're like Oscar and Felix and the name of that movie.
I mean, since 1980 was the first time that you guys worked together.
Right.
I know some broadcasters that run through color analysts by the year, but you and Tom just have an incredible friendship, an incredible relationship. How did that all start?
We've done a lot together. As I mentioned to Bob Sansevier, I knew Tom's parents. Tom knew my parents. Tom's been to my place in Michigan, been to my place down in Wisconsin. We've gone to Alaska together. We did Michigan State hockey together. When I first came here from Michigan State, I still had a contact back there, and they wound up doing like 6 or 7 games a season on TV. And I brought Tom along with me as my color man. And he was interesting because at that point in time, that was before Tom had done the Gophers. He had never seen a college hockey game, I don't think. So he's the analyst, and I'm the play-by-play guy, so I do my bit. And Tom, all of a sudden, he's not saying anything. So we go to a break. I go, what's wrong with you? I said, say something. He goes, I don't know even where to start. Everybody's open. There's defensive breakdowns all over the place. This is college hockey. And then, of course, he went on and did the Gophers for 11 years and all the rest of stuff. But we've gone to see Al Shaver together, taking the ferry across the straits over to the island in British Columbia.
Yep.
Saw Al in a play. We've done a lot together.
I remember my first road game was Reunion Arena in Dallas. My first real road game as the beat writer of the Florida Panthers was up at the Saddle Dome in Calgary. Your first road game with Tom, if I'm not mistaken, was at McNichols Arena in Denver.
Kerry Frazier.
First NHL game.
His first NHL game.
Yeah.
And it wound up a 6-6 tie between the North Stars and the famed Colorado Rockies.
Amazing. And now, the beat writers at McNichols used to be upper end zone. Where was the press box for you guys?
You know, I honestly can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly can't remember.
Because that was the worst sightline ever.
And that's strange, too, because I am Mr. Press Box.
Let's talk about that.
I go back to the old days when, I guess to explain to fans, picture the XL Energy Center, okay?
Yep.
Picture the XL Energy Center. The best seats here, I think, are the club level. You take that club level where the front row is in the club level at the XL Energy Center, you pull it all the way out and bring it all the way to the edge of the glass. That's the way the old arenas used to be. Same with the upper deck. Now, the negative to that is down below the lower bowl, you would have obstructed seats because the girders, the steel girders are what they use to hold the upper deck up. So, in other words, if you were in the balcony, the seats were incredible. I mean, I remember at Old Tiger Stadium, for example, you got a box seat in the upper deck between first and third. I mean, it's the greatest seat in sports.
Yeah. How did you wind up down here? Because if people don't know, again, the XL Energy Center is at the lower level of the press boxes, usually just for print journalists, Wild staff, scouts, and some game ops people. The upper deck is for GM, scratch players, broadcasters. How'd you wind up down on this level?
I didn't like the view because you get movement though. Yeah, that's the problem. Somebody will get up and move, or somebody will get up and drink a Coke or go get a Coke. And every time you see a blur, it distracts you.
Yeah.
And plus the fact when you guys put your computers up, it sometimes blocked half the ice.
Right.
And I thought, this is really stupid. Who designed something like this? So there's a few of them around the league. So finally,
Pittsburgh.
Todd Leiwicki is the one who rescued me.
Mm-hmm.
I brought him over here. I brought him down to where we're sitting right now. I said, Todd, take a look. Look at the ice. Now, let's go upstairs, stand here. Look, you tell me there's not a difference.
Yeah.
And, thankfully, he probably extended my career.
Well, it's funny. I did a podcast with LaPanta up in the booth last week, and I couldn't believe the difference just from here to there.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Not even the obstructive view. I'm just saying the distance.
Yeah, the distance.
It just feels like
and you're further back. Now, Anthony also is one of the younger broadcasters, and they don't, they're not burdened with age like I am. And also, they don't remember what the other ones were like.
Right. It is interesting because, I'll go on with Tom, not this year because of the COVID protocols, but I'll go on with Tom when we're on the road or at home. And even like I remember when we were doing the one game in Pittsburgh the day before the Devin Dudnik trade, and Backstrom got shellacked. And I remember I did the radio in between periods, and I like said to Tom, like, this team needs a freaking goalie. This is ridiculous.
Well, I remember that one. Yeah.
But you remember I was like ranting the day before the trade. But the funniest thing about that is I was in that Pittsburgh broadcast booth, and I saw exactly what you, because I always say Pittsburgh is one of the best press boxes in the league.
Oh, it's a beautiful press box.
Yeah, but then I realized it's from my perspective, not your perspective.
That's the problem. I mean, what do you and Anthony call your podcast? The worst seats?
Worst seats in the house.
I mean, that's a lot of times what we get. And what happens is for me and for most of the guys I talk to, height is not the problem. Height is no problem generally. Mm-hmm. It's the depth.
Yeah.
It's from where we're sitting now to over to those far boards on the far side of the building. And the newer buildings, because of the way they're built now, they don't use the steel girders, and they push the upper deck and the press box are pushed back. It's a real depth problem.
So
you're a long way from the far side of the ice.
So best press box in the league for you to cover, to do games in?
Well, Vancouver's fantastic. Vancouver,
gondola.
We missed it now. We haven't been out for a year.
Yeah.
But, Vancouver's spectacular. Winnipeg's spectacular. Of the new buildings, I worship Little Caesars Arena because it's like the old state. You go straight up in the air. I understand you guys are very high there.
Yeah. We're way, way high in there. Montreal is probably another one. Now, worst. What would it be? Worst would be
Edmonton. That's usually everybody.
The new Edmonton.
Everybody
right?
talks about that.
Because the old Edmonton was incredible.
Yeah, the old Edmonton was good. But that's as the old buildings got checked off one at a time, we lost all of our good vantage points.
It's funny. The other last year or 2 years ago, I tried to figure out how many arenas I've covered games in. I think it's about 46. I wonder how many you've been in.
I don't know. I never counted them up. Because, but quick story on the press box. Fred Cusick in Boston, an older guy who has since passed away, Hall of Famer broadcaster. When they built the new TD Garden, he immediately switched his schedule to all road games. And I don't think that the TD Garden is that bad. But Fred was that much older than me. Fred goes back to the Boston Garden was the two most incredible press boxes, broadcast locations ever. Were Tiger Stadium in Detroit, where you were 70 feet away from home plate and you could get your head torn off with a foul ball. And the other one was the broadcast booth at the Boston Garden, where you just hung right over the ice.
Right.
And that's what Fred was used to. And all of a sudden they put him upstairs and he didn't like that. Well, by today's standards, the TD Garden is actually fairly decent.
Yeah, it's like me. I covered one game at Maple Leafs Garden, but not anymore. I had never covered a game at the old Montreal
Forum.
The Forum. I never covered a game at Chicago Stadium, Boston Garden, none of those.
The only one I missed was the original Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
Tom Reed made his NHL debut, which shows you how old he is.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
I haven't even been there. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned Vancouver. One of my favorite stories was in 2005, one of my first road games covering the Wild. I went to dinner with you guys. We sat at this bar. It might have been at Moxie's, or I don't know where it would have been. But I went with you and Tom, and you guys told me the story about you driving a car with Tom in the back seat, holding all this lumber to build a deck at your house.
I was living in Burnsville at the time, and I was building I don't build anything. Tom was putting we were getting lumber, and Tom was actually going to build the deck. This is how much I
remember
Tom.
Tom saying at that bar.
I had all the Trek loaded in the back of which I'm assuming was an SUV or whatever I had. I thought I had it all in, and we took off at a light, and all the lumber went flying right out the back, and we're it was a long night, but we got it done.
Tom said there was like a yellow light, and you gunned it with him holding all this lumber.
We may have lost Tom in the process.
The lumber flew out of the back of your SUV.
He's put up with me for years. I can't drive a nail straight.
Yeah.
That's what he always says. Now I don't even try.
Yeah, I remember you guys are telling me the story, and I'm just crying laughing, and Tom just looks at me and goes,
Tom's excellent at like building anything.
Yeah.
When he lived in Eagan years ago, he had like a 7-layer deck that you could, he had all these Christmas lights on it and everything. And we were worried because the airport's not that far from there. And the planes are probably, disoriented when they came over his house and saw all these lights with this humongous deck that Tom built.
Yeah. I remember he looked at me and he goes, Kurtzy, he's not a handyman. So
no, he's not.
No. Thank goodness Tom didn't fall out of the truck with the lumber.
No, he's still with us.
Yeah. calling these games on TV, what's the hardest uniforms to read the numbers? I mean, I know you've only done seven opponents.
The worst were our retro uniforms.
Okay,
and I really looked forward to those.
Yeah.
And, you know, because we go back to the North Stars. The difference is the North Stars did not wear gold numbers.
Right.
They were green numbers on white. It was hard in person. It was hard on television.
Right.
It's just really hard to read them.
Wow. Yeah, and I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, there was one last year or 2 years ago that the numbers were, even for us in the press box, on the shoulders.
Well, Edmonton's not doing anybody any favors with those new, whatever those things are.
I think it was that.
Yeah.
So that's...
It's everything, you know? It's just, you know, and it's not my eyesight, because my eyesight is basically 20/20 when I, corrected, with glasses. But so it's not that, you know, that's not the problem.
Yeah. Refs mics is another thing that sometimes ticks you off.
Oh, that was the old days.
Yeah.
Like, that was the old... We had Scotty that worked here, and we ran on him constantly. And he kept saying it was their fault, not his. And, I mean, every time they would blow it, Tom would say something, and Scotty would go crazy, and it was...
Tell everybody the story.
But, I mean, you could... I mean, when they did that, in high school football, they work.
Yeah.
They should have worked in the NHL. Yeah.
Tell everybody the story. Another great Tom Reed, Bob Kurtz story.
There are too many of them.
Yeah, I know. I think you guys were staying at like the airport Marriott in Detroit once, and the whole way back to the hotel, you had to like use the restroom.
Yeah, we went out. Detroit always had that deal after the game. You know, this is, again, it's where you can go downstairs and have beer and pizza after the game. So we went down, we had a couple of beers and pizza. We had a rental car, and we shot out to the we were staying at the Marriott. They had a Marriott right smack in the airport in Detroit. Right in the airport.
Wow.
So we got rid of the rental car, got back to the thing, and we're going up the and by this time I need to use the room badly, and so I'm doing my dance, and Tom hits the elevator, and he roars in, and I roar in, and we're on like the fourth floor, is that right? Yeah, the fourth floor, but unbeknownst to me, Tom hit three. So that door opens at three, and I go roaring out to find my room, and there's Tom waving as the door's closed. That's what a nice guy is.
I cannot imagine.
There's a million of them.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the funniest thing about Tom, like in 2005, he started this habit, because he knows how much I love to break stories, where whenever he walks by me, he'll look at me with this like really like straight face and go, "Have you heard?"
Or you go, "Hear about the trade?"
Yeah. But he, the other thing, the "have you heard?" He has sucked me into that 100 times. Every time I'm like, my heart sinks right away. I'm like, what did I miss? And then he'll just start laughing. Like, but he started this in 05 and he still does it in 2021.
You still fall for it.
And I still fall for it. It's unbelievable. Because I know that one time that I don't listen to him, they're just actually going to be like, they traded this guy and you missed it. So, oh man, it's funny. The other great Tom Reed, Bob Kurtz story is, weren't you guys hiking in Alaska?
Which one is this? Where I was overly prepared?
Yeah, you were like overly prepared.
I read all these. We're going to Alaska, and
we went for a hike, right?
Yeah, we were going for a hike, and I read all the books. You better be prepared. You know, there's bears. There's this. You know, the way. So I mean, I was prepared. So, but I didn't realize that we were going on this low of a level of a hike as we wound up on. So I come out with all this crap and
like walking sticks.
I got my sticks. You know, I got the whole bit. And all of a sudden, like there's like a little kid like with high heels that goes by.
That's what he said. This woman walks by you in high heels. It's just funny. Yeah, I remember one of our first Napa trips that we took. I was driving with the broadcasters. I think it was Greenland Tier car, and you rented a car to go with Tom and you were following me up to Napa, and within 1 second I lost you guys. Remember? I was like in the wrong lane and I just cut over.
Greenway was driving. Okay.
No, it was me. Yeah, because I remember I was looking in the
really before GPS was
you were really following us in. And you had no directions. It was like, "All right, we'll follow you up there." And all of a sudden, like, I'm in the wrong lane and green light says to me, like, "No, you got to get on that highway there." And so I like cut over like my two lanes to get on this highway. And I look left and I see you fly by on the highway that we were on. And Tom looking at me like just like with this, "What the?"
But there was wine involved, so we found our way there.
Oh man, that was funny.
Like two bloodhounds.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Lou Nanny is turning 80 next week.
He's unbelievable.
Yeah, like I just spent so much time with him in Vegas, Bob, and it was such a joy. What's your best? Tell me some Lou Nanny stories.
Well, I met Louis when I came, but the thing about Louis was, you're familiar with, I don't know how familiar you are with the what Louis got when he became GM. Louis always gets a good deal for himself. So he and he's never wants to really coach, because every time he's forced to coach because he fires somebody, he gets himself out from behind the bench just as fast as he possibly can. Well, he takes over the North Stars. He just finishes playing and he becomes general manager. And he's got the golden touch. What they did at that time, we merged. We got an entire team. It was like the Wild, like, for example, all of a sudden getting the Nashville Predators players on top of their own. We got the Cleveland Barons. We got Jill Melosh. We got Greg Smith. I'm trying to remember who else we picked up in the thing. Plus, Louis had, at the time, two picks in the first round. He got Craig Hartsburg, and he got Tommy McCarthy. Plus, he had just drafted the year before number one overall and had Bobby Smith. So he had like two teams worth of talent. Only could happen to Louis.
Yeah. It's you know what? He's so sharp still. Yeah. Like, there's nothing he doesn't remember, which is just
We just got him recently. Did you hear what happened to him?
No.
He's upstairs doing Fox TV. We are downstairs in the fishing lodge doing the same game off a TV down there. Louis is hungry. So he asked Reed, he's talking to him, you know, by the thing, what's going on? He says, I'm really hungry up here. I said, oh, well, we just finished up. We had ham sandwiches and spaghetti, which we didn't. We had nothing down there. Absolutely nothing. But Louis couldn't come down. He goes, can't you send me some? Please send me some food. Well, no, we can't do it. We have nobody free to do it. So Louis went nuts. But Louis worked the next game as well. And the first thing Louis did was make a beeline down to the fishing lodge to check out our food, which, of course, we had not. Tom got him again.
Who are your favorite broadcasters? Growing up, but like before you were a broadcaster, but then when you became a broadcaster, who are the people that
I grew up? I grew up with Bruce Martin. I mean, I'll do hockey. I'll keep it to hockey. I did Bruce Martin in Detroit, who I worked with when I first broke into the business. And we had Hockey Night in Canada. So that's another thing I said. Detroit's a border city. Mm-hmm. Canada is the other side of the water, as you know. When you walk out the back of Joe Louis Arena, there's the river, there's Canada. But anyway, we got the Maple Leafs. So we had Foster Hewitt. We had Danny Gallivan and the Montreal Canadiens. I mean, those were two real Hall of Fame. I mean, Foster Hewitt goes back to almost the invention of radio.
Right. That's crazy. So, and like, who became like in like legends in the game? Who became like the people that you were tightest with while working?
What do you mean? I'm
like, you know, like, you know, it's funny. Like when I think of like the great broadcasters that I grew up like working with, the Jeff Remmers and people like that. Like anybody that in the game that you became
good.
Special.
I mean, yeah. You know, I mean, off the top of my head, I can't put one ahead. I mean, like. John Forslund does a tremendous job. Most of the people, I mean, whether they're writers, broadcasters, color analysts, or play-by-play guys at this level are pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, some are more your cup of tea than others. I mean, their style or whatever, but they're all good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think, though, that like when I listen to you, like and I mean this with the utmost admiration, like I think of old school. You know, you have that old, that broadcasting sound of like the great radio guys.
But it's also radio. And I think that's one thing that's been lost, that, you know, because I think so many people have been weaned on TV and now everything is a video. That you have to, the way I look at it anyway, when you're doing a radio game, I assume the person cannot see the game.
Yeah.
That they're not linking it up. Because if you link it up with TV, I think there's probably way too many words. Yeah.
Left to right on your radio dial.
That's an old one. I mean, none of that stuff's necessarily original.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's been used before.
Yeah, but I don't know.
But there was a radio dial.
And that's why I love watching Columbus games. Because, like, to me, when I listen to Jeff Remmer, it's
a living legend.
But it is old school. Like, it's like listening to a game back in the 70s, 80s.
That's the way that
And he doesn't have a signature goal.
Dan Kelly used to do it. Yep. Dan Kelly was the big one in the United States. And Foster, and especially Danny Gallivan, who had the cannonading shot from the point and all that for Montreal.
Yeah, no doubt.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So a guy named Kevin Fallness has all these different questions for you. You want me to throw some of them at you first?
As long as you don't throw him at me.
Yeah. I mean, that is it. First of all, is it true that Kevin Fallness might be the reason why you are retiring? It's just, I mean, it's got to be great.
Well, 20 years of Kevin. I mean, you saw the signs here earlier that he owed Norty money.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Like, and then, you know, the tough part about your job is that he's in your ear. Like, can you that voice in your ear, you have to go
well,
to bed
not
screaming.
In so,
anyway, let's see.
He actually makes my job easier a lot of times.
So, Fallness asks, when Bob Kurtz started broadcasting, ice hadn't been invented yet. How has the game changed since then?
Well, it's changed a lot. When I was a kid, there were six teams in the National Hockey League. I mean, there was Detroit, Chicago, Toronto, Montreal, Boston, and what would be the other one? Trying to think off the top of my head.
New York Rangers.
New York Rangers. That was it. And they played each other 14 times a season, seven home, seven row. That added up to 70.
Yeah.
I mean, what's changed is almost everything and then almost nothing. I mean, like, it's the same basic game. People are basically the same. The players are still the best players in all the sports. The difference is they're in much better condition. The players can skate better. They're coached better electronically. I mean, you've seen how it's changed in our business. I mean, you've gone from, I used to have to call up if I was doing Michigan State hockey and you're playing Colorado College, you'd have to call up the sports information director at Colorado College and say, all right, give me your lineup. Number two, Zach, is that with the Z-A-C-H, you know, and then whatever his last name was, go through the whole roster. Now, of course, you just pick up your iPhone and bang, there it is. Everything's right there for you.
Well, hey, look at the athletic, right?
And you've had a lot to do with that too. When you wrote the blogs when you first came here.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, like a morning skate, it's all on phone, including every interview they did.
I was so resistant. It's so funny that I work at the Athletic now because I remember when the Strip came up with the blog idea. I was so resistant to it, and. I remember writing my first blog at this pool in Phoenix in January, right
nice before
the
Super Bowl.
Yeah, I know. And it was my first Russo's Rants blog. And then I'm like, you know what? This is actually going to be kind of useful. You know, getting out stuff that you can't get in the paper could be a little more analytical on there, a little more opinionated. And I sort of embraced it. But who knew, like years ago, like I think back to the 90s, Bob, you know, you mentioned about calling the SID. When I was in the 90s, if the Panthers played on a five-game road trip, I would, before I'd have to go on MapQuest.com or something, and I'd have to get, you know, sit there and say, all right, airport to the Phoenix Marriott to the America West Arena, America West Arena back to the Marriott. And I'd have to print out just pages and pages and pages of directions. And then if they were on that five-game road trip, I would have to bring the Phoenix Coyotes media guide and the LA Kings media guide and the Anaheim Ducks media guide and the big guide and record book in a separate bag because there was nowhere online. You know, you didn't go if I needed to know how big and tall Kaprizov was or Spurgeon, there was no Google it real quick.
No,
you had to go in the media guide.
And actually, when I broke into the business, that was before you could even print out the directions.
Yeah.
I mean, when I first broke in at Michigan State, things were done on the old, I forget what they called, but it was like a carbon copy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they had a that's how they ran the between periods.
Yeah, stuff. I remember going to Office Depot all the time when I was a kid and buying the carbon paper.
I remember going into, when I went to Michigan State, walking into Jennison Fieldhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Jennison Fieldhouse was just that. It was a fieldhouse. It was a dirt floor, and the basketball floor went over the dirt. And the one press box was on one side. They had stuff on the other side. They would take the press notes and send them via, you know, the first half stats via a little basket, and it traveled by wire across the court up in the air over to the other side.
Right. Bruce Siski. You know Bruce,
another
University
good guy.
Of Minnesota Duluth broadcaster. All he does is call national championship games. From one broadcaster to another, can you ask him some tips on memorizing all the different names you run into during a season, names and numbers? Do you, like, you get here, we're doing this game, this podcast 3-4 hours before game 6 here. You obviously, this is a different animal because you've now called five of these games. But do you during the day in a normal game, if the Wild are playing the Edmonton Oilers, do you go and how do you memorize names?
Well,
and
I
numbers?
Have it easy now because I've been around so long. Like you obviously know the Wild cold,
right?
So all you have to do is worry about the visiting team. But like you mentioned, this year we played all the visiting teams 8 times, so
you know
that's
them.
No big deal. But even in the regular season in the NHL, it carries over from year to year. Where I used to have difficulty would be when that one time when they really heavily loaded division play, and you'd have one division which you'd almost never see. Usually it was like at the time, like the Florida Panthers or the Ottawa Senators. You'd go in and you'd play them like one time all season long, and you had or you hadn't even played them the previous year.
Yeah.
And then you had absolutely no idea who, and then to memorize all of those was pretty difficult. You get it done finally. What I usually do also is that's where you need the pregame skate. Cuz you do it and you do it in color, or you watch them, you know, warm up, mm-hmm. and just call in your head who they are, and somehow the numbers, you know, stick.
Yeah. You weren't hit with the puck the same day David Poile was, right? That was close. Yeah, it was around the same time.
You got it a lot worse than I did.
Yeah. Did you have it this? You didn't get hit with the puck the day that Pete Weber.
No.
Okay, that was. But that one just popped in my head.
I got hit with the puck as I was the only person sitting in the lower bowl. There's 18,000 seats here. I was the only one there, and I forget who the goaltender was, but he had a blocker save. It flipped over the net, yeah. and it came down and cut me. And, yeah. and then I ran. I was bleeding, and I ran into the room, and Donnie Fuller had me sit down, and the players were looking at me, and they had a pool going as to how many stitches, and Danny Heatley won because he guessed 10.
Yeah, Kurtsey. Tom Reed, I remember I walk into the arena that day, he goes, well, Kurtsey got hit by a puck, and I'm like, and I just, you know, you never believe anything Tom says, and I didn't believe him. He goes, no, seriously, he got hit by a puck, and then I look down, there's blood. I'm like, oh my God. That reminds me of, we're in Greensboro, North Carolina once, and Paul Laws is shooting pucks at the camera hole in the corner, trying to scare me that he's going to hit me in the chest, and all of a sudden he flips one through there and it hits me straight in the sternum and I go down. I cannot breathe. And I wind up on Stan Wong's trainer table at Greensboro Coliseum when the Panthers are playing the Hurricanes. And Paul Laws comes in after to profusely apologizing. And Dino Ciccarelli looks at me and goes, that's how bad of a shot you are. You were trying to miss and put it right through. So
I had Wes Walls, I think it was, take a shot at me in Tampa. You know,
and did it go through?
No, he was just fooling around, flipping it up, figuring that I'd see it, and I wasn't paying attention. And then he got the look of horror on his face as it hit like a seat or two away.
Kyler asks, we'll get to some more Fondless questions, trust me. Kyler asks, if you could go back in time and make a different path in life away from radio, what would it have been? What did you want to be when you were a kid? Did you want to be a broadcaster?
Yeah, I wanted to be a broadcaster. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's something I wanted to do, and I went to Michigan State, and I was in business school, and I was, you know, you're doing okay, but my heart really wasn't in it, and I wanted to get into something that I enjoyed, but I had no idea how to even begin to go about it, and then I went over to a television station, talked to a guy there, and, yeah. you know, got pointed in the right direction.
Put that in perspective, that you are, you know, at you know, in the twilight years, regardless if you retire or not of your career, but yet had this incredible life doing what you wanted to do when you were little, Bob Kurtz. You gotta just be like, pinch yourself for the career that you did have.
You do. I mean, you do. I mean, I can't say you do it every day, but you do. You should do it every day, but you don't. But you know, it's funny, as it comes to an end, whether it's now or later, I don't find myself thinking much about here.
Yeah.
What I find myself thinking about is how it began at Michigan State.
Yeah.
How I walked down to we had Breslin Arena is there right now, but when I was at Michigan State as a worker, there were Quonset huts there where Breslin Arena stands now. That's where I began my broadcasting career, by walking in there and talking to the sports director, and he sent me over to sports information, and I didn't even know what sports information was. So, I mean, I'm going to do something weird. It may sound weird, but I'm going to go back to a place called Dagwood's. It's a little bar in Lansing, Michigan. It's about a mile down the street from where Breslin Center is, and about a mile and a tenth from where Munn Arena, the hockey arena, is. And you sort of sit there, have a beer and a hamburger, and reminisce about all the people who helped you along the way, most of whom are, you know, a lot of them are dead now. I mean, this is years ago in Michigan State. But I find myself thinking more about the beginning and the people in the beginning than you do the end, because you see all the people here every day anyway.
Yeah.
Obviously, you haven't seen a lot of those people in a long, long time.
Yeah, I do that a lot. And I'm, you know, I haven't done this job nearly as long as you are, but it's just, I don't know what it is. Maybe just when you get up there in age, you start thinking about a lot of the past. And
yeah, I mean, how this thing started. And some people, you know, gave you they might not even realize it, how much they were helping you.
Yeah.
For them, it was just an Oreo, go over here and do this. But somebody has to tell you where to go.
And that's the thing. It's like the other thing that you realize when you've done this job that you love for as long as you are is that every decision you made along the way got you to this point. You know, it really is. It's
every,
like, what if I,
person who helped.
You make one turn the wrong way and your career path could have gone
one turn a different way, and it turns out differently.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. I'm Joe Haggerty, broadcaster and writer up in Boston, says, I'd love to know his favorite call or memory from his time doing play-by-play for the Red Sox.
There's a number. We I had a good time with the Red Sox. One weird one. The one comes to mind was one night Nomar Garciaparra had 3 home runs and 10 runs batted in a game. That was big.
Wow.
I also did a Chris Bosio no-hitter. Bosio was pitching for Seattle. There must have been 3,000 people in the stands at the old Kingdom. But one of the weird ones that came to mind, we used to have, Jerry Remy and I used to have a ball in spring training.
Mm-hmm.
And 1995, that's when the players went on strike or were locked out or whatever. And we had a replacement spring training. And the place we worked for, Nesson, did every spring training game on TV. So we went down and we did spring training replacement baseball. And so the Red Sox replacements are playing the Yankee replacements in Fort Lauderdale. There was a pitch inside and we had a bench clearing brawl in a replacement game. I said, like Remy was saying, even the replacement players for the Red Sox and Yankees don't like each other.
Yeah, I used to go to that stadium all the time when I was a kid, when I'd go visit my grandparents. My grandfather was a huge Yankee fan, so he used to bring us spring training there and to West Palm Beach Stadium to watch the Expos. And I think the Cardinals were up there too. But what a pit that stadium was, right next to Lockhart Stadium.
It's got to be the greatest assignment, where it was. I haven't done it in 20 years. It's got to be the greatest assignment in sports.
Yeah.
You go down there, we did games there. Every game is an afternoon game.
Yeah.
Players are in a hurry, so the pace of the game is much better than it is during the regular season. Game starts at 1, game's over by 4, you have a whole night free. It's like 80 degrees down there. The games don't mean anything, so the players, for the most part, are in a good mood. Everybody's happy.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about this, but Dylan Hughes, by the way, he says that when Kurtz hangs it up, it won't be the same. Him and Reed are iconic, and there was something special about his he shoots, he scores line or left to right on your radio dial. Wish him the best. I got a lot of those, by the way, a ton of those from Wild fans that say it will not be the same when you leave. But Dylan does ask, and we talked a little bit about it, but outside the X, what's your best place to call a game, whether it's now, whether it's baseball?
A lot of the old iconic stadiums were all good. I mean, uniformly they were good, but they're no longer with us. Among
what do you
the
think
new
Nassau Coliseum?
I mean, like Vancouver again. Nassau Coliseum.
Yeah, that was my favorite.
You're crammed in, but it's very good.
Yeah, you
Among
are crammed
the newest
in.
Ones, that's why we were so pleasantly surprised with Little Caesars Arena.
Yeah. Remember the seats
gondola.
That they used to have in the press box in Nassau Coliseum? It wasn't like actual seats. It was like the type that it was attached to the bottom of your tabletop. So
you
barely
made it in.
Especially somebody as big as I was. Glenn asks, in your opinion, what was the best North Star team that was probably better than the teams that even went to the finals, and the best North Stars player?
They had a nice run. That their finals team in 81 was very good. And they followed that with very good teams in 82 and 83. They kept running into Chicago in the opening round of the playoffs. Now, Chicago wasn't as good then as Chicago became, obviously, when the Wild came in. But they were a fighting team. And they always seemed to have the North Stars number. But the North Stars went all the way to the finals in like 1981, roared out of the gate again the following year. They beat the Winnipeg Jets one night 15-2.
Yeah.
That's how good they were.
Yeah.
And then you hit Chicago in the playoffs and it was out in the first round and everybody's disappointed. But they had some great teams. Neil Broughton and all those guys.
Yeah.
Dino Cicerelli.
Yeah, Dino, still one of my... I talked to Dino the other day. I sent a selfie with Louis in Vegas to Dino. You know, it is funny. Like, it's not funny, but the one thing I feel like I do lack as a hockey writer in Minnesota is that North Star's historical information in my head. You know, I feel like I know everything that you could happen about... Like, I've caught up on the Wild the first four seasons that I didn't cover. Mm-hmm. North Star's are still, to me, it was so
You're
long
ways before, back.
Yeah.
And so, I go back, you know, Tom and I go back to The Godfather.
Right.
John Mariucci.
Yep.
I mean, when I broke into hockey, and when it was a young Cub, my first real hockey job, I was doing the games for Michigan State, and Amo Bassoni was the coach of Michigan State. You have to be known hockey for a while to know his name. Mm-hmm. And Amo's best friend was John Mariucci, who was around a lot. Herb Brooks coached the Gophers. Badger Bob Johnson coached Wisconsin. Lefty Smith coached Notre Dame. And they're all living legends.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Mariucci was, you'd have loved him. He was just a treat. He was the best after-dinner speaker I have ever seen in my life anywhere. He'd sit. John would sit back, and he'd have a napkin. And you know, everybody else would do their thing. Somebody would get up and speak, or Russo would get up and speak, or Lou would get up and speak. And then John would just make a little note here, a little note there. And then John would get up at the end. He always went last and just blew them all right out of the water. He was the absolute best I've ever seen.
The definition of save the best for last. By the way, if you're not an Athletic subscriber, go to theathletic.com/straight from the source. You can get in for $3.99 a month. Also, incredible podcasts on this week. Don Granato, the interim and head coach of the Buffalo Sabres, is Craig Custanson, Sean Gentile's guest on the Athletic Hockey Show. And Cam Neely, Seabass from Dumb and Dumber, the president of the Boston Bruins, joined Scott Burnside and Pierre LeBrun on the Two-Man Advantage edition of the Athletic Hockey Show on Wednesday. Bob, some more Twitter questions for you. Actually, you know what? I didn't realize that you actually did a game of color with Doug Risebrough once.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
I think it was on the island.
And so where was Tom? Tom Reed?
Tom, I think that was when Tom was he was ill for some reason. And I was planning on doing the game alone, and they said, no, you know, Doug wants to do it with you. So wow. I go up, and you know, wasn't sure whether Doug was going to be there or not. So Doug's pretty good at this. But then about halfway through the first period, Doug is getting ticked off. The team's not playing very well. So he says he's going to go downstairs and talk to him. So I figured that's it. He storms up, you know, slams the, you know, out he goes down and apparently reams him out. I didn't think I'd ever see him again, but second period comes, Doug is back.
What year would that have been?
It was when Jock was coaching, obviously.
Yeah, so
it was before 2010.
Yeah. So I wonder.
It was later too. I mean,
I was the beat writer.
Yeah, you may have almost been there.
Okay, that's interesting.
I mean, they were getting pretty good by then. Right. I mean,
I actually kind of remember that, but I don't remember that I knew that he went down and stormed into the locker room.
Yeah, I don't think you knew
that
he went.
I wish I did know that. But I think I do kind of remember that. I feel like that was when Tom did have those. Remember, there was something he had some issue.
Yeah, it was a knee problem of some sort. And he got an infection.
Yes. Yep, 100%. Remember
he
one
was really,
game
really
in
sick.
St. Louis where he was like sweating profusely, and I'm like, Tom,
he's got that hockey mentality.
Yeah, Tom, you need to go get looked at right now. This is not good. Like, he's really...
I mean, I honestly wondered whether he was going to make it or not.
Yeah, it was scary. Really was. I think that was around the same time. In fact, that might have been because, remember, there was some weird trip where the Wild played Islanders St. Louis. And I bet you it was that trip that Doug did the game.
I thought it was
a
Nassau Coliseum.
Yeah, well, no, that's what I mean. I think that it was, if it was at Nassau Coliseum with Doug, maybe we went to St. Louis after, and that's why I saw Tom still not doing well. Gopher et al. Asks, what was your favorite decade of hockey to cover and why?
I don't know if I could answer that. I mean, romantically, you go back in your mind, it was better. I remember when we had the lockout in 95 or whatever it was, when I was working at Nesson in Boston. And you always remember, I always remember the original six, that's when hockey was hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, Nesson is now showing these old game clips. And they weren't moving as fast on TV as I remembered them moving. You know, so, I mean, it's improved, obviously, decade by decade.
Right.
It's not a different game, but I mean, it's a different game.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Pete Best asks, the sports broadcasting landscape has certainly changed since you started with the boom of social media, instant visual clips and highlights. Do you feel a pressure to feel seen on radio with the saturation of these platforms? Has it made your job easier or harder?
I think it's made the job easier myself. Mm-hmm. It's as far as it being seen, I don't... given my age and the fact that you've been around a while, I don't feel necessarily the pressure to do it. But I would imagine, you know, if you were a younger broadcaster, I mean, you obviously have to get noticed. Yeah. And I mean, if that's the way it's done, and that's what, you know, that's what you do.
Right.
But I mean, it's made the job very much easier.
Yeah.
I mean, like I say, everything is available for you if you want on the phone.
Yeah. Yeah. Which brings me to a fallness question. What's your favorite hashtag and emoji when you lurk on Twitter?
The beer mug.
Yeah. Who does he follow closest on Instagram? What's your favorite TikTok dance?
TikTok, I don't know anything about. I don't have Instagram either. My wife explains it all to me. If the kid sends something on Instagram, I get shown the picture.
Yeah. Jeff Hudson, good question. Besides the obvious pace of play, what are some of the biggest differences between doing play-by-play for hockey and baseball?
Pace of play would be the biggest one. I mean, you can, you know, hockey will sit there. I'll make a couple of notes, and half the time you don't even need the couple of notes. I mean, right. The game basically plays itself. And speaking of the Lone Ranger, to my right, the masked man is coming in himself, Tom Reed.
We've had a lot of Tom Reed stories here. Tom, you're welcome.
What was the rest of that question?
Yeah.
Before I was so rudely interrupted.
What's the difference between baseball and I mean, that would be the big thing.
You get a power pitcher, for example, like Roger Clemens was. He threw a lot of pitches in the first inning, get all this stuff, and the next thing you know, all your stuff is gone, and you're still on the top of the first.
Right. Benjamin asks, every broadcaster has their signature caller moment. Do you believe in miracles? Stuff like that. As you think back over the year, what do you think was yours? Do you have a signature call or favorite?
I did the little flip stuff. Most of it just sort of popped out of nowhere.
Right.
Like the left to right across your radio dial or the scent of overtime. Mm-hmm. I worked with a guy in New England, Bob Norton, who was tremendous. Yeah. He used to always he'd get late in a hockey game. It'd be like 3-3 and he'd go, the scent of overtime is in the air. So I picked, you just pick things up as you go along.
The one game that does come to my mind when I think of you is Gabrick's 5-goal game. I mean, I thought every one of your goal calls, you built the anticipation with each goal call, if you remember.
Yeah.
You
don't
still
get too many of those.
Yeah.
That's one of the problems. I mean, with,
The cool thing about being a radio play-by-play guy is that if the team wins the cup, you're doing all four rounds. I can't imagine being a TV play-by-play guy where essentially it's like, all right, thanks for calling all season in one round, but nice seeing
you. Well, Tom and I were fortunate. We did the 81 finals.
Okay.
At that time, there was no national TV in the United States.
Okay.
So we went all the way to the finals and did the whole thing. Nowadays, of course, they don't do it.
Yeah. Chris Hansen, you kind of talked about this, but what made you want to get into broadcasting?
It's something I always wanted to do. Yeah. I mean, I grew up, I listened to Ernie Harwell on Tiger Baseball. And when I was a kid, that was the gargantuan sport. Baseball was everything football is now and then some because it was romanticized so much. I mean, that was, everybody collected baseball cards. Baseball was, was the big deal. So you followed that. And then, like I said, I followed hockey as well.
Todd Krauss asks, what did Bob learn from Al Shaver? Bob calls the game very much in that style.
Well, Al was just tremendous. It's a different era. You know, the previous question asked some of the changes. Like when Al's era, they stayed right wing, left wing, center, up the ice, back the ice.
Right.
You know, now, of course, they're all over the place. Yeah. I mean, you look in front
especially
of the net,
wild.
You look in front of the net, and there's Spurgeon.
Yeah.
What is he doing there?
Or Dumba. There was one shift last game where Dumba, I think, skated like 500 yards on one shift. I was like, dude. Let's chillax now.
It was that last game was a classic.
Yeah, yeah. Here's a great question. Natron goes, hey, Kevin. He called games from, wrong, but it's a Kevin I actually enjoy, not a Falmouth, just for everybody listening to know. I'm just kidding.
A different Kevin.
Yeah. Natron, good question. He called games for some really garbage Minnesota Twins teams. What's your most memorable moment from that unfortunate time?
Well, they weren't all garbage. They had a pretty good year. I think it was 84, whatever it was. What I remember the most is I had a weird thing. A connection between Minnesota and Boston. Like, I remember I called Herbeck's first game. I called Herbeck's last game.
Wow.
Because he retired right after a doubleheader between the Red Sox and the Twins at the Metrodome, and then the Players went on strike. I remember when Kirby, I called Kirby Puckett's first game with the Twins when he came down to Anaheim and got the 5 base hits. I was there. I was doing the spring training game, Twins against the Red Sox in Fort Myers, when Kirby woke up with the eye problem but never played again. Yeah. I called Gary Gaetti's first game for the Twins. I was in the dugout when Gary Gaetti retired as a member of the Boston Red Sox, without actually having played during the regular season. Same thing for Frank Viola. And Tom Brunansky came over in a trade from Anaheim. So I did his first game as a Twin, and he of course eventually played in Boston at the end of his career, right fielder for the Red Sox.
Right.
So, I mean, it was funny how that went. That was my group.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Don't you think, by the way, Kevin would be a great podcast guest behind you?
He'd be absolutely on. I would get Kevin and Nordy on the same one.
But I mean, just imagine, like, so Kevin is the wild security guy.
Oh,
you're talking
a different Kevin.
No, I just feel like Kevin knows some really cool
Kevin
stuff.
Kevin has some off.
He has some great stories to break, a few awesome stories for a podcast. Yeah,
most of the time he's sworn to secrecy.
I'm sure Sickman will allow that one.
Yeah.
Let's see. Let's get to a couple more Kevin Fallon's questions, then we can wrap it up and let you get ready for game six here. this is a good question. Kevin asks, what's his favorite part about sitting behind on the charter, Kevin Gorg and Dan Myers? Is it the constant fantasy sports chatter or the fact that neither of them ever stops talking?
It could be A or B. They're two very nice guys. They do like to chat.
I cannot imagine sitting behind them on a plane.
Well, we've gone downhill because Tom and I used to sit behind Spurgeon and Scandella. And I used to always tell Scandella would always put his seat back. And I told him, I said, you know, we're going to get rid of you. Because if you keep doing that stuff, and sooner or later, we got rid of him. We never could get rid of Gorg and Myers, though.
I think this is a shot at me. How much more fun was this team to be around when guys like Tom Jones covered the team? So Tom was the first ever Star Tribune hockey writer. For the Wild, obviously not the North Stars.
I listened to you today. I think you were on KFAN today.
Twice.
You were saying you were in your 18th year with the Wild?
16th.
16th year.
Yeah,
with the
26th
Wild.
Year covering hockey.
Time really flies.
Yeah. It's my 16th year. I covered the Panthers for 10. This is my 16th year covering the Wild. Isn't that crazy?
And you've gone from probably the nicest, warmest weather in the NHL to we're not too far from the bottom here.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of the weather down in South Florida, though. More fallenless questions. What's worse, a cold press box or when they turn off the lights?
Both. There was one. We're laughing. Somebody around the league. This is a copycat league, not only on the ice, but up here in game ops. Some bright bulb turned off a light someplace in New York or wherever, and they discovered they could make the whole arena go dark. So within a week, all 31 arenas in the National Hockey League shut their lights off. We got a habit here of doing it right when they open the game. We'll come right out of the open. And the lights will go down. I'm trying to find a flashlight so I can see my notes and all the rest of the stuff. And Faldus, of course, gets a giant kick out of it.
Does Tom Reed have the dollar curtsy actually spent at the pub frame somewhere? That's a good one. Let's see. Ask him his feelings when I use up all his time in intermission.
He's unbelievable. He's got to do 16 recaps, and then I got to come back like at the beginning of a second period, you know, reintroduce ourselves and all of the people that are working on the broadcast, tell them what the score is, figure out that the guy's in the penalty box, and he gives me like 12 seconds to do all this.
Here's a good one. Why is Jim Rogers his longtime friend and engineer while Chris Carpenter is barely even mentioned?
Well, that's because Jim Rogers is showing up for every game for 20 years. Chris Carpenter works about 3 games a season.
Oh, man.
Rogers has been with us through thick and thin.
Yeah.
Chris is wonderful when he's downstairs. He's just not down there very much.
Yeah. Well, it would be nice if Faunus would just stay downstairs. That's the problem.
But he wanders, though.
Yeah. Exactly.
We can send him down your way tonight.
Final couple questions, Bob, in all seriousness. I mean, you've had this unreal career. Again, hopefully it's not over yet. But, I mean, we are doing this before game six. I mean, technically, the season could end tonight. If let's say it is, you know, whenever this Wild season ends, doesn't have to be tonight, you know, whether it's next game, like, is there like that third period? Will it be on your mind? Like, this could be it? Or are you so content that I'll just make this decision when the season is over and not really get all emotional during the action?
I won't get all emotional. I'm just going to wait until the season's over. Like I said, about 5 years ago, I actually thought that was the last period. Plus, a lot of times in hockey, what happens is it's overtime and it, it ends in a snap, yep. You know.
You're not going to just drop some F-bomb. Well, see everybody. It's been nice. Nice
career. Bye, folks.
Yeah, bye, folks. Yeah, thanks for allowing me to call two playoff round wins in the last six. No, I'm just kidding. Career advice for young broadcasters. Whenever I have broadcasters on, I had Forslin on last week. You mentioned him. I've had Rimmer of Kenny Albert or whatever. You know, a lot of people, when I have broadcasters on my podcast, say they're young, aspiring sports journalists. Every kid that's a sports fan grows up, and if you don't want to play the game, you want to be a play-by-play guy. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be a play-by-play guy, and somehow I wound up being a lowly sports writer. What would be your biggest advice that you could give to young aspiring journalists?
What I do, Ernie Harwell was tremendous to me. Mm-hmm. He was among the guys that helped him, probably more so than any, because he always took time to talk to young sports broadcasters. So I always made a vow to myself, if I ever got a job, I would do it. And I did it for most of my career. The last couple of years, I've begged off, only because, given my age and when I broke into the business, I don't think I'm current enough. I think they need advice now from somebody like Anthony LaPanta or younger, who can direct them in this age of social media what they should do. I don't know that I would be their best source right now.
Mm-hmm.
But usually it's that boyish enthusiasm that gets you. I mean, you're a kid when you start this thing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason why you do it. You know, and that's why I say, you know, as you get near the end, I look back more to the beginning than I do at the end, because that's the age in which you were inspired, and, you know, you were so unsure of yourself, you didn't know what to do, and people reached out and they helped you, and, you know, and sometimes they didn't even realize they were helping you.
Yeah.
So you want to help them, but I think the best way I could help them is, you know, go talk to somebody who's more wired in with the current way it's done.
Yeah. I shouldn't say this because I don't want to get you in trouble, but you know what, one of the things, as you were saying about people that helped you, I still remember when I first started covering the Wild, how often at the end of each season I would make sure I'd go out to dinner with you and Tom, because you had a way of always talking about the team. I'm like, that's a good line. That's good. Remember how many things you'd say? I'm like,
you can't even see the taillights through the fog.
Yeah, that one. I mean, there were a lot of, like, if I looked at my end of the year, as we call them in the business, postmortems of the Wild.
We're not that far out of it. We still have games in hand. Yeah. Well, you better hurry up.
That was your. That was always your great. The games in hand thing was always one that was funny with you. But I just remember, like, I'd be sitting with you guys at a restaurant or a bar, and we'd be talking about the team, and you just, the way you said something, like, that's how I want to write it, you know. And I remember I'd always just write down little lines, and they'd wind up in the Star Tribune.
You
in my
say
end
it,
year
I couldn't.
Yeah, exactly. So again, I don't want to get you in trouble, but a lot of those lines that pissed off the organization back in the day.
No, it wasn't me. Although it was the taillights. You can't see the taillights through the fog.
Yeah.
They're disappearing. They're disappearing into the fog.
The other great Bob Kurtz line that I've used 1,000 times that I know you didn't make up, but you said it once, and it was just so obvious to me. A leopard doesn't change its spots. I've used that so often, and you know where that's from
is John Mariucci.
Right.
John Mariucci used to say they would have this troublesome player that they would acquire from someplace else. He would come in, he'd play well, and then of course he'd revert to form.
Yeah.
And Mariucci always used to say, you can't bring in the leopard and put on the you put on the white paint, you paint him white, but sooner or later the rains start, and the water washes off the white paint, and we have the leopard.
Yeah. It's a great line to use in sports, too, because you just think about it. You could use it about anybody. I mean, you know, it's like, how often would they be like, we got to get Pierre-Marc Bouchard to shoot more? Well, a leopard doesn't change its spots. You got to get Matt Zuccarello to shoot more. Well, a leopard doesn't change its. You know, if you get to a certain point,
that shows you how hockey or the rest of the sports, they change, but they don't change. I mean, this saying goes back to John Mariucci, and my guess is it goes back far before John.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hey, this was a ton of fun. You know, I sure hope this isn't your final game. One, because I want the Wild to continue here, and so I can keep on working and covering hockey. I'm not paid by game, but it'd be nice to actually cover a little bit of playoff run. Plus, I got a flight back to
Vegas
at 1 p.m. tomorrow.
You'd like this to be the best of 15, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I know, exactly. It is funny, though. I started thinking about packing today, and I called the league to find out when the next round would start. And it's either going to be Sunday or Monday, because the round two in Denver would be Sunday, Wednesday, or Monday, Wednesday, because they can't play Tuesday. But all of a sudden, it dawns on me today, I'm packing. I'm not packing for 2 days if I go to Vegas. I'm packing for a week.
Well,
I'd have to go right to Denver.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, I know. Exactly. So maybe you can come on that trip, Bob. What do you think? Maybe not.
Maybe I could.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Bob, this was a lot of fun. You know, you've always been so great to me. And, you know, I know that Wild fans and North Star fans have been just so thrilled to be able to hear you for a long, long time. Hopefully it'll continue for longer. But, you know, if it's not, I mean, you know, what a career you've had. Wild fans are the beneficiary of that, being able to hear you for the last 20 years, Bob.
They haven't run me out of town yet.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, that's why.
They did once, and then I went to Boston and came back. So.
Exactly. Well, that is Bob Kurtz. Thanks, as always, for tuning in to Straight from the Source. And check out our comments section for each podcast episode of The Athletic app and rate and subscribe to Straight from the Source on Apple. If you aren't already a subscriber, go to theathletic.com/straight from the source and receive a subscription for just $3.99 per month. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, Mike.